This is the Oncozine Brief on UK Health Radio with Peter Hofflin.
In this episode of the Oncozine Brief, I'm talking with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte. In our program today, which was originally recorded in August 2020, we talk about the companies and the transformative therapies they have developed for patients diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma that has come back or did not respond to previous treatment and who cannot receive a stem cell transplant. We also talk about a drug called tafasitamab, which is branded as Monjuvi. This drug is the first drug in combination with lenalidomide approved by the United States Food and Drug Administration for the second-line treatment of adult patients diagnosed with relapsed or refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Tafasitamab is a humanized CD19-targeted monoclonal antibody. The drug was approved under accelerated approval based on overall response rate. Continued approval may be contingent upon verification and description of clinical benefit in a confirmatory trial. Diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is the most common type of non-Hodgkin lymphoma in adults worldwide. The disease, characterized by rapidly growing masses of malignant B-cells in the lymph node, spleen, liver, bone marrow, and other organs, is typically diagnosed in patients in their 60s. But that does not mean that younger patients may not get the disease. Diffuse large B-cell lymphoma is an aggressive disease, with about 1 in 3 patients not responding to initial therapy or relapsing soon thereafter. In the United States, each year approximately 10,000 patients are diagnosed with a disease who cannot receive a stem cell transplant. And that means that managing relapsed or refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma continues to be a challenge for the treating physicians and care team. Despite the treatment advances made over the last decades, approximately 40% of patients relapse or are refractory to chemotherapy, with low subsequent response rate and an associated poor prognosis, poor health-related quality of life, and a loss of life expectancy of about 5 years compared with the general population. As a result, the disease represents a major medical need, and researchers and scientists are continuing their quest in trying to find an optimal treatment option. The combination therapy, which includes tafasitamab, is expected to help reduce this medical need. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncozine Brief. The Oncozine Brief is developed in collaboration with our online journal, Oncozine, at oncozine.com, where you can find additional information and the latest news about cancer, cancer diagnosis and treatment, and cancer prevention. For more information on how to support the program, visit our website at oncozine.com. And if you're living in the United States and want to receive our newsletter, text the word cancer to 66866, and we will make sure that you will receive our newsletter, which includes an overview of the latest news in oncology and hematology. Now, let's listen to our interview with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte. With me on the phone are Peter Langmuir and Malte Peters. Malte Peters is Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir is Group Vice President Oncology Targeted Therapies at Incyte. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Oncozine Brief.
Thank you.
Hello.
So before we go to talk about a new drug that was recently approved by the FDA for the treatment of relapsed and refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, let me ask you a question about how are you guys doing with the COVID pandemic? I mean, not only yourself, but maybe your family, friends, your coworkers. How are you guys coping?
Yeah, thanks, Peter, for asking. This is Malte. We are well at Morphosys. We have offices in Munich, in Germany, and in Boston, in the United States. Overall, our company is quite fortunate that we do not have many co-workers who have been affected by COVID. What's also very important for us is that our clinical trials have fortunately been able to progress quite well. We are active in cancer development, drug development, but also in autoimmune disease drug development. And fortunately, our clinical studies have not been affected too hard by the corona crisis. So overall, we have managed to go to come through the crisis very well. And of course, we hope that the corona crisis will be over soon so that everybody can get back to normal.
Right.
And I think the same is true for us at Insight. And I think we're continuing to weather it as everyone else is in our priority, similar to what Malte said, is trying to ensure that patients continue to get the medicines they need, continue participation in the clinical trials, and ensure their safety on the trials, as well as ensuring the safety of all of our employees. So, yeah, we're continuing to weather it, continuing to monitor as it evolves throughout the world. But so far, I think we're managing okay.
That's good to hear. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. Now, you mentioned both of you mentioned clinical trials in the introduction there. I mean, when you look at watch TV, when you listen to the radio, often it seems that the only clinical trials that are being conducted are clinical trials in finding a cure for COVID-19 or the coronavirus. How difficult is it for you in oncology, dealing with forms of lymphoma, to recruit patients under these circumstances, because patients need to come to a hospital? So how difficult is that, and what have you tried to do to solve potential problems in that respect?
Unfortunately, Peter, the cancer doesn't stop because of the coronavirus. So the incidence of cancer diagnosis across all indications has remained constant before and after the corona crisis. And patients do need urgent treatment if they are diagnosed with cancer as much as they did before the pandemic. So what's more difficult is on the level of the hospitals to ensure that the hospital staff manages all the different additional work that falls upon them with respect to dividing their time between the corona patients and cancer patients. But so far, I think the hospitals we are working with have done an excellent job in ensuring that patients with urgent need of immediate treatment for cancer get the treatment they need.
But that is definitely good news. Indeed, cancer does not stop because of a pandemic, and patients need to be treated. It made life for everybody involved probably a little bit more difficult, but it is good to know that, I mean, there is an ongoing process in which we'd be able to kind of treat patients. That's always a good thing to know. Now, let's talk a little bit about the drug, tafasitamab. That was approved by the FDA earlier this year on July the 31st. It's a drug that is a combination therapy, and it's for relapsed and refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Before we go to talk about the drug itself, tell me a little bit about the disease area. What is a diffuse large B-cell lymphoma? How often does it happen? How common is it? What causes is it? I mean, tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so maybe I start and say that if you are working as a doctor in the hospital and a patient comes to the hospital suffering from diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, that's a medical emergency. So people with this diagnosis require immediate treatment, and it's a life-threatening disease. So patients need immediate treatment, and the hallmark of this particular form of cancer is that the tumor cells multiply very rapidly. So it's a very aggressive disease. So that's why the treatment that has recently approved, Monjuvi, in combination with lenalidomide, is such an important new aspect of treatment. And that's why we are really highly motivated and delighted to have been able to bring this therapy to patients.
Let's take a break, and then we're back with our interview with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosis, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncogene Brief.
Did you know that generic drugs are just as safe and effective as brand name drugs? Generics might look different, but they work the same way. And they can even save you money. Don't believe me? Ask your doctor or pharmacist. Or visit fda.gov/genericdrugs.
Each day, researchers make new discoveries that bring us closer to the moment when all cancer patients can become survivors. Some days they take small steps. Others, huge discoveries lead to giant leaps forward. This progress, both small steps and giant leaps, happens with the help of clinical trials. Clinical trials are a fundamental path to progress and the brightest torch researchers have to light their way towards better treatments. And if you've been diagnosed with cancer, they may be your brightest ray of hope. Clinical trials introduce new hope in addition to the current standard of care by allowing researchers to provide participants access to cutting-edge and potentially life-saving treatments. So if you're interested in exploring new treatment options while helping to light the path for other patients, clinical trials may be the best choice for you. Speak with your doctor and visit standuptocancer.org/clinicaltrials to learn more about clinical trials. Together, we can stand up for all of us.
This is the Oncogene Brief on UK Health Radio with Peter Hofland.
And welcome back. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncogene Brief.
So patients with relapsed or refractory DLBCL who cannot undergo autologous stem cell transplants currently do not have very great treatment options. And prior to the approval of Monjuvi, there was no FDA-approved treatment for this particular group of patients. So the unmet need, as you say, was therefore extremely high. And that's why this approval represents really a new paradigm, I would say, for patients with this form of relapsed refractory DLBCL, because before this approval, there was nothing really, there was nothing approved by FDA. So I don't know, Peter Langmore, if you want to add to this, but these are my immediate thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think you asked in terms of the numbers as well. I mean, I think we're, we look at it in the U.S., for example, about 30,000 patients that require frontline treatment for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and of those, maybe about a third of them end up going on to need further treatment after that. So. We're looking at a fairly substantial number of patients where there's this high unmet need, and as Malte said, really for a life-threatening condition.
Now, just to make sure that we talk about the same thing, Monjuvi is actually the drug that we were talking about, that is tafasitamab. I mean, that's the World Health Organization's name. So that when we talk about the drug that we actually that people understand, where we're talking about the same thing. So you mentioned about a third of patients. Probably in the United States, about roughly 10,000 people, if I calculate it real quick, on an annual basis, and they need to have further treatment. They're going to be in a phase of relapse or refractory disease. What does that mean for them?
I mean, I think now with the approval of tafasitamab in the U.S., it gives them another option for therapy, and one that where we have a substantial number of patients having complete response and durable response. So it gives them potentially effective option for a long-term efficacy. You know, there are a number of agents that are currently used in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and a number of others being tested. But this is the, first agent that's been approved for the second-line treatment of adults with relapsed or refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma in the U.S. So it's really meeting an unmet need for patients with this very aggressive disease.
I agree. And I can only confirm what Peter said correctly. I think the exciting data that led to the approval and that convinced FDA that this was an important treatment was, as Peter correctly said, the high number of patients who achieved a complete response, which means that the tumor goes away completely, and the durability of these responses. So that's really the new part of the new aspect here. In the label, in the data that we submitted to FDA, the median duration of response was 21.7 months. But we have now longer-term data with a longer observation time, and the median duration of response is now 34.6 months. That's almost 3 years. So that's really a very strong data point that ensures that people who respond with a complete response to this treatment potentially stay on this drug for a very long time.
Yeah, now you're talking about the duration of the drug, I mean, the effectiveness of the drug. One of the other measurements, of course, that is not necessarily a technical measurement, but it is definitely very important for patients, is quality of life. So health-related quality of life, relatively subjective in many cases, but how does the disease, for example, affect the quality of life? And how does the drug, the tafasitamab, actually help in restoring that quality of life?
Yeah, so maybe we speak a bit about the disease before. So if a patient is diagnosed with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, the disease is characterized by very rapidly growing masses of B-cells in the lymph nodes, in the spleen, in the liver, in the bone marrow. And what the patients feel is that they have enlarged lymph nodes in the neck, in the underarm, in the groin, or in the stomach. Patients describe fever, night sweats, extreme tiredness, weight loss, or skin rash. So patients are really, really ill. When you institute treatment in, you know, frontline, but in our case in second line or higher, these symptoms go away very rapidly. The tumor masses shrink, and all these so-called constitutional symptoms that I described disappear, and patients are able to lead a much more normal life than they were before.
So that means a major improvement in the quality of life. Of course, I can imagine, I mean, in the description of the disease that you just mentioned, this is very uncomfortable, painful to some extent, I guess. But if people are being treated and they respond well, then their quality of life is to some extent restored.
That's correct. I think that's a correct statement. Yes.
Now, we touched on the fact that about a third of the patients are not responding to treatment or are not responding well to treatment. What is the potential reason why is the reason why they don't respond well to treatment in the initial phase?
Yeah, that's a good question, and the scientific answer is not 100% clear. We know that tumors, and that's true probably for every cancer type, have abilities to prevent a treatment from working, and different mechanisms exist. And so in this case, in the lymphoma case, it's not 100% clear what turns the switch from responding to a treatment into not responding to a treatment. There are a couple of mechanisms that are currently being studied, such as expression of different molecules on the surface of tumor cells, or deregulated proliferation pathways inside of the tumor cells. But there's not one size-fits-all answer that I'm able to give you to explain why a tumor stops responding to treatment. Peter Langmore, I don't know, you're also very active in the translational field in cancer. I don't know, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to add. I mean, people have done a lot of work looking at genetic abnormalities in lymphomas, and some of those seem to increase the chance that you will respond or not respond to various therapies. But you know, the bottom line is we don't know, and it's difficult to predict sometimes who's going to respond and who doesn't. You know, the unfortunate reality is that, you know, a substantial number of patients, you know, will not respond or will relapse after what can otherwise be a fairly effective therapy. And that's why, you know, there's a need for more effective therapies that can be given to patients tolerably in later lines of therapy.
Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about the lines of therapy that are available right now. If you look at the current standards of therapy for the treatment, what would be that? What is the current standard of treatment?
So the first line of treatment is immunochemotherapy consisting of rituximab, an antibody directed against CD20, in conjunction with a chemotherapy cocktail consisting of four different agents, which is called CHOP, CHOP. So this the first line of treatment is called R-CHOP. And as Peter correctly described, roughly, I would say 50 to 60% of patients are cured with this initial treatment, but about 40% or so of patients either don't respond or relapse after the first initial response.
Now, when you mentioned the word cured, that means that they are completely cured in the sense of what no evidence of disease. Is that what you refer to in that first part of the, is it 50 to 60% of the people that you mentioned?
Yes, that's correct.
So then the remaining patients, right, they are refractory or relapse. That is basically where we're now going to concentrate on, the people that really are seeing their disease come back.
Correct.
Yep.
Let's take a break, and then we're back with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte.
Over the years, you've brought opioids into your home. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But holding on to opioids puts your family at risk. Learn more at www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Sarcoma. Odds are you've never heard that word before. But for the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word. Life-changing and devastating because sarcoma is cancer. Sarcoma is a cancer of bone and soft tissue more prevalent in children than in adults. More than 6,000 people lose their lives to sarcoma each year. Treatment options for sarcoma are limited, and new therapies are desperately needed. More research and increased awareness is necessary to find a cure for a cancer that you probably didn't even know existed until now. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is determined to help those affected by this forgotten cancer, to bring hope to the children and adults whose lives are forever changed by a word they had never heard before. Please help us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on sarcoma and the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, please go to curesarcoma.org.
This is the Oncogene Brief on UK Health Radio with Peter Hofflin.
If you're just joining us, this week I'm talking with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte.
Now, when you describe that group of patients, does that mean that a second time that they get a treatment, they may have a chance to be cured, or is that a kind of a condition that really needs a different approach to treatment?
So far, the treatment in second line or higher has not elicited cures. So that's an area of very active clinical research. And I think what I alluded to earlier, the long durability of responses, which approaches now 3 years, would suggest that patients can benefit from a treatment for a very long time. If this is going to be able to cure patients, we don't know at this moment. But I would say it's a very important step into long-term responses of patients who otherwise would progress quite rapidly.
So that is, in essence, is good news, right? It compares to, I mean, so people are not cured in first line or the first treatment options, but then with the drug that you have available for treatment options in second line, the opportunity for patients to be cured or at least to be in remission for a long time. I mean, you mentioned 3 years. It's there. It's some of the things that potentially may even go longer.
That's correct. And since the drug has only just achieved approval, the data that we collect in our ongoing studies is still maturing. So you're fully correct in saying that possibly longer observation times may yield interesting additional information that could point to how long patients could actually benefit from this treatment.
Right. Now, talking about the approval, talking about the trial that you've sponsored, it's a phase 2 trial called L-MIND. Tell me a little bit about that particular trial. Who qualifies to be part of that? What are some of the results that you've seen? Potentially, if patients or physicians hear about this trial, is there still an opportunity to participate in that trial?
So L-MIND was designed as a study of a combination of tafasitamab or Monjuvi with lenalidomide. So it was a combination treatment of two drugs. And patients had to have previously been treated with the so-called frontline treatment consisting of the R-CHOP regimen that I described earlier. And patients had to have between one and a higher number of prior treatments. So in our trial, half of the patients had received only one prior line of treatment, and the other half of patients received two lines or more. And that particular composition of the patient population convinced FDA to grant approval in second-line patients and those patients with higher lines of prior treatments.
And if patients or physicians hear about this trial, is there a potential for them to still participate? Is it an ongoing trial? Because I understand the approval that you have is what we call an accelerated approval that requires you to submit additional data in the near future. What kind of options are there?
So the trial has been closed to enrollment. So the trial is fully enrolled and no other patients can come on the study. But since Monjuvi or tafasitamab in combination with lenalidomide is now commercially available in the United States, theoretically, every patient in the United States has a chance to receive this treatment if he or she goes to a hospital or to a doctor.
Right. So it is open and available for patients that really need this. They have that unmet medical need.
Yes, we were able to provide the drug 5 days after the approval in the United States. And the drug is available for treatment today for any patient who is suffering from this DLBCL disease in second line or higher situations.
Right. And are there particular clinical trials in addition to the commercially available product? Are there clinical trials ongoing in which you do additional studies to expand the approval?
Yes, we have additional studies ongoing. We have a study ongoing in frontline DLBCL in untreated patients because we want to find out if tafasitamab in combination with lenalidomide also would provide an option for patients who are untreated, yeah, who are who have not received any prior treatments before. So that study is ongoing in the United States, and MorphoSys, in collaboration with Incyte, is about to start a larger study in frontline DLBCL, which is starting at the beginning of next year.
So there is definitely in more opportunity in that respect. And that's, of course, is you mentioned frontline therapy. That would replace the current standard of care if it's approved and if it's functioning.
It would add on to the current standard of care. So the idea is in that study to add tafasitamab and lenalidomide to the established R-CHOP treatment. That would be the idea.
Now, one of the interesting things is that the national cancer, what is it, the organization that actually approves or works with a lot of different hospitals, the NCCN, they have included this particular treatment in their recommendations. How important is that for you?
That's very important because the NCCN guidelines are very important guidelines for every doctor in the United States. So it's basically a handbook of what to do with and how to treat patients with certain diseases. So it's a very important clinical practice guideline in oncology, and we are very satisfied to know and to have found out that the NCCN acted so quickly to include Monjuvi in combination with lenalidomide in the guidelines.
Right, and that means that what you said is a kind of a guideline, and so doctors have then the opportunity to look at their patient's specific needs and what is the potentially the best treatment options available.
Yes, that's correct. So just one word on the NCCN. It's a non-for-profit alliance of I think around 30 or so leading cancer centers in the United States. And the NCCN guidelines are there to assist decision-making for physicians, but also nurses, pharmacists, payers, basically everybody, with a goal to synchronize and to improve patient care and outcome, and it's a very powerful and very well-respected alliance.
Let's take a break, and then we're back with our interview with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at MorphoSys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte.
Clinical trials allow researchers to introduce new hope by providing participants access to cutting-edge and potentially life-saving treatments. Speak with your doctor and visit standuptocancer.org/clinicaltrials to learn more. Together, we can stand up for all of us.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is encouraging cancer patients and survivors to be extra cautious during the COVID-19 pandemic. Cancer treatment, especially chemotherapy, weakens the immune system, making you at higher risk of severe illness. Dr. Lisa Richardson is director of the CDC's Division of Cancer Prevention and Control.
Take these steps to stay healthy. Wash your hands often with soap and water. Clean and disinfect frequently touched surfaces daily. Stay home. If you must leave, keep at least 6 feet between you and others. Avoid touching your face, eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. If your temperature is 100.4 or higher, call your doctor. Use CDC's coronavirus self-checker to help you make decisions about seeking medical care.
Make sure your caregivers and household members are aware of your higher risk and take precautions. Visit cdc.gov/coronavirus and preventcancerinfections.org for more health tips.
This is the Oncogene Brief on UK Health Radio with Peter Hofflin.
If you're just joining us, this week I'm talking with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte.
Now, so far, we've been talking a little bit about what happens here in the United States. Are you, with this particular drug, looking at markets outside the United States? I can only imagine that what we see here in the United States might be replicated in Europe, for example. Are you pursuing that opportunity in terms of regulatory approval?
Peter Langmuir, do you want to take that?
Yeah. So we currently we've submitted the data for review by the European Medicines Agency, so in the European Union, and that's currently under review. They've validated the submission at this point, and so we're in discussions with them. And so that's our next step for trying to get approval for tafasitamab in different markets.
Right. So, I mean, and do you have an indication when, for example, the European Medical Evaluation Authorities may look at some of your drugs in terms of making it available to patients?
Again, the drug is currently under review, and you know, hopefully, if we get the drug approved, then we'll make it available to patients as quickly as possible after that.
You don't have a clear timeline yet in terms of what the medical authorities in Europe would do.
We don't have a fixed date yet, no.
So now one of the things is that I have both of you here on the phone, two different companies, Morphosys and Incyte. There's a reason for that, because you both are working with this particular drug. Early this year, the two companies entered into a collaboration and license agreement to further develop the drug. Tell me a little bit more about that relationship that you're building.
Yeah, so do you want me to start? I can. So as you say, we entered into the collaboration back in January of this year. It's both for collaborating on clinical development as well as the commercialization. So in the United States, the drug will be co-commercialized by both Morphosys and by Incyte. And from a development standpoint, we're also sharing the development responsibilities as well. So we collaborate very closely now on the future development activities for the compound. We work very closely on all the future regulatory submissions that we'll have. So it's we think it'll be a very good partnership. Obviously, it's gotten off to a very good start. We were very enthusiastic at Incyte to, you know, join with Morphosys in this because of the data we've seen with tafasitamab from the L9 study that looked very encouraging. And so we were very eager to join in this collaboration. So, you know, if Malte, you want to make any additional comments?
Yeah, no, thanks, Peter. I can only second that from day one. The interaction between the two companies was very positive. I think both companies share the passion for science and for helping patients as quickly as possible. I think we took some educated risk here of submitting a relatively small single arm uncontrolled study for an approval, and Incyte and Morphosys both shared the passion of going into novel paths of discussing with the regulatory agencies. And I think the success of the approval is a testament to that desire. So I think both companies are driven really by science, scientific knowledge, passion to bring drugs to patients as quickly as possible, and to go as broad as we possibly can to make this drug available to as many patients as possible. So I think from my perspective, this is the best of all worlds, collaborating with Incyte.
Well, that sounds very interesting. It's like, I mean, there are potentials, of course, for additional drug development. So are we looking from the outside in, does this partnership that you're just building help or may ultimately lead to additional treatment options for patients with this particular disease?
I think we hope so. I mean, Malte spoke to some of the studies we have ongoing, and we're in discussions around future areas that we may want to look at developing the drug. I think the advantage is it essentially pools the resources and the thought and the expertise from the two companies to look for the maximum opportunities we have for developing tafasitamab in different parts of the world. So as I say, I'm hopeful that it will continue to be a very productive and good collaboration that will ultimately benefit patients around the world.
So, I mean, if I sum it up as a potential to see more things in the very near future with additional treatment options, not beyond to this particular drug, all around the world, that is definitely something that you can respond to?
I think that's our goal.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time this morning. Again, what I said, I'm looking forward to the potential what you are bringing to patients to make sure that patients are definitely having a better chance in surviving or definitely better quality of life in this particular disease area, potentially also in different disease areas within oncology. And again, thanks very much for your time this morning.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for the opportunity.
In today's edition of the Oncogene Brief, I spoke with Malte Peters, Chief Research and Development Officer at Morphosys, and Peter Langmuir, Vice President Oncology Drug Development at Incyte, about transformative therapies being developed for patients diagnosed with relapsed or refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, including a new drug called tafasitamab. Tafasitamab, which is branded as Monjuvi, is commercially available in the United States and co-marketed by Morphosys and Incyte. The companies are committed to supporting patients throughout their treatment journey and are working together to help lower patient access barriers. As part of this commitment, the companies have launched My Mission Support, a robust patient support program offering financial assistance, ongoing education, and other resources for patients who are prescribed tafasitamab in the United States. For more information about this program, visit their website, mymissionsupport.com. For us here at the Oncogene Brief, we want to thank you, our listeners, sponsors, and advertisers, for your ongoing support. Your support makes it possible that you can hear this program via PRX Public Radio Exchange and in the United Kingdom and mainland Europe via UK Health Radio. You can also download our program via podcast and streaming media, including iTunes and Spotify. For more information about supporting the Oncogene Brief, go to oncogene@oncogene.com. If you're living in the United States and want to receive our newsletter, text the word CANCER to 66866, and we will make sure that you'll receive our newsletter, which includes an overview of the latest news in oncology and hematology. Thank you all, and thank you for listening, and join us again for our next episode. I'm Peter Hofland, and this is the Oncogene Brief.
The Oncogene Brief is produced for Sun Valley Communication by Peter Hofland, Sonia Portillo, Evan Wendt, David Kaler, and distributed by InPress Media Group. Support for the Oncogene Brief comes from listeners of this station and our commercial underwriters and advertisers. For more information about underwriting and sponsoring options, visit our website at oncogene.com/underwriting. The Oncogene Brief contains health and medicine-related information and is provided for educational and entertainment purposes only. The content is not intended as a substitute for professional medical or health advice and does not replace your doctor's advice. Your doctor is the best person to answer questions about your personal health. If you hear something in this program that doesn't agree with what your doctor has told you, ask him or her about it.